You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The last national government brought in changes to the youth justice system, bringing 17-year-olds under its jurisdiction. The changes haven't been in effect for long, but there is already a problem that has resulted in a dual court process for some offenders. Under the changes, some offences were marked Schedule 1A and required to be heard outside of the youth court. For those charged with these offences in combination with lesser ones, they have to appear in front of both the youth court and potentially the High Court. I spoke with Tanya Sawicki-Mead from Just Speak about the changes, first asking her to explain how they came to be.
The previous law excluded 17-year-olds for no really good reason, basically. Despite the youth court being set up to deal with all young people, the cut-off point was 16, which is really consistent with how we understand and treat young people in every other aspect of our kind of law for the most part. 17-year-olds have to get their parents' permission to leave school. And if they are, you know, arrested, but if they're arrested, then it's a whole different scheme of things. So what the law change tried to do is basically bring our youth justice system into line with, firstly, our international obligations under the Convention on the Rights of the Child, but also the way that the rest of our kind of social systems operate, because we acknowledge that 17-year-olds are still young people. Not only in terms of their lives and many of them still living at home with their parents, but also in terms of brain development. So, you know, the 17-year-olds and indeed people all the way up to their early 20s have not yet fully developed their frontal lobes, really struggle with assessing risk and consequences of their actions, and that the youth court is the best place to deal with young people who have offended, because that is where we have experts working in youth policy and psychologists and social workers who know how to support and hold young people accountable.
And how is the law change working in practice?
Well, it's hard to say yet, because it's only been enforced for about 6 to 8 weeks now, so only since 5th of July. But what has become apparent, which I think Just Speak flagged early on, was that the exclusions that were set up in the legislation based on certain categories of crimes were totally nonsensical and unnecessary, and have created a lot of unnecessary confusion for people, for 17-year-olds coming before the court. So the way that it worked was there was a schedule of offences, Schedule 1A, that basically said young people accused of these crimes would still go to the adult court. Now, there's no reason for that to be the case. The judges already have the power to send cases to the adult court if necessary. So I think that the severity of the crime means that it needs a jury trial, or if the youth court was unable to deal with it. But for the most part, the whole reason the youth court is set up is to deal with all kinds of offending by young people, and that they are best equipped to know what young people need, how they can be held accountable, and how we can prevent them from offending again. So the Schedule 1A, however, has created confusion, not just because this is this arbitrary schedule, but also for people who have mixed charges. So further charge that falls outside of that schedule, so they're a 17-year-old who's definitely going to have their case heard in youth court, and then they might have a charge which is in that schedule and therefore may be heard by the High Court. And it's very, very confusing and arbitrary, really. So it leads to poor outcomes for those people, because there's a lot of confusion and delay, and also a really different approach in those two courts. In terms of how young people are involved, how any victims are involved, how their family are involved or notified, it's arguably has the potential to be a miscarriage of justice, I would say.
So this results, having the separate schedule results in them appearing before two courts, essentially?
Mm. Yeah, so that's what some lawyers are saying is happening for their clients, which is really confusing and unnecessary, and also adds to the burden of both courts, which is really, at a time like this when our courts are very overwhelmed because they've been underfunded for so long, particularly with legal aid being under immense pressure, is really unnecessary and just kind of just undermines the whole intent of the legislation, which is to say our world-leading youth court system is the best place for young people. Why would we not continue to use it for young people who offend?
Why do you think the government did make this this separate schedule of charges, was it to appear tough on crime or what? Yeah,
I think that it was a concern. So the law change happened under the previous national government. I think that the schedule of offences set out in that was merely just out of fear that they would be seen to be soft on young people, which is, again, a total misrepresentation of how the youth court works. It's not soft, it's just best set up to deal with young people, has the skills and the resources available to make sure that they're supported and that they are held accountable. So it was primarily a political calculus rather than one based on what would actually get the best outcomes for everyone involved. That includes victims, that includes whānau, that includes the young person themselves, and of course the system, because the youth court is so much better at reducing reoffending than our adult system. We lobbied against that schedule at the time. We sort of said it was unnecessary. It was based on a kind of a fear of being seen soft rather than evidence, as with many others. But nevertheless, it was included, and we think the best course of action now would be for the government to remove that schedule and continue with the intent of the legislation as otherwise set out, which is to have all 17-year-olds included in the youth court system.
If they do appear in front of the High Court, for example, are they more likely to face quite punitive sanctions as opposed to maybe a more rehabilitative process that happens through the youth court?
Yes, I think that the adult system has a lot to learn from the youth system in terms of how it takes a much more holistic, preventative approach to justice. The youth court processes are, many of them are grounded in restorative justice, which, you know, people who are victims of crime as well as people who have offended report much higher levels of satisfaction with, and generally result in better outcomes for everyone involved. The adult system is still plagued by, I think, an emphasis on punishment at the expense of things like accountability, restoration and prevention, and of course rehabilitation. And people who are sent to who are sentenced to spend time in adult corrective institutions basically end up getting shafted because they don't get the help that they need. They're in an environment mixing with people much older than them, and in some cases, and not very, very rarely are the conditions that led to their offending and the reasons why they're in front of the court ever addressed in the adult system. It's just simply not equipped to do that in the way that the youth court system is.
So what needs to change? Is it as simple as just getting rid of this Schedule 1A and bringing all 17-year-olds into the youth justice system, no matter what they're charged with?
Yes. The government needs to respond to the fact that this current legislation has created confusion and inconsistency, and remove that schedule completely so that we can continue with our goal of improving the outcomes for young people. I think the next thing that also needs to be considered is an additional increase to the age of youth justice. We've lobbied for it to be included up to 21, which there is evidence in other jurisdictions of that working really effectively, because everything we know about brain development knows that actually all the way up to people in the early 20s, we would better respond to what they need by using the restorative preventative approaches that we have in the youth justice system. So I would say that should be pretty high up on this government's agenda.
How likely do you think the government is to, at least to begin with, to bring 17-year-olds charged with whatever they're charged with into the youth justice system? Or do you think they might do what the previous government did and maybe get a bit scared?
I don't know. It depends a little bit on how much they listen to the evidence and how courageous they're willing to be. There's not always a great understanding of how the youth system works. I think people are quite happy to hear it praised internationally for being world-leading and for being really innovative. But then when it comes down to certain people, there's certain individuals or people who don't understand the mechanisms of it, there's a kind of sudden sense of fear that it's not working as intended, which is, and the opposite is true. The youth court system, for example, between 2008 and 2018, decreased by between a half and two-thirds the number of young people who come before the court because of the diversionary processes involved. So it's really, really effective. But I think when people don't want to then acknowledge that makes involved making what seem like sometimes politically unpopular opinions, decisions about it. But I think if they're courageous enough to make the case for it, which is, you know, based on the evidence, they would see that there's so much to be gained from continuing to invest in our youth justice system, and so little to be gained from working against it and going down that terrible kind of path of punitivism and sort of anti-evidence.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.